Hello, everyone, and welcome back to MF Uncensored. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows like the Multiverse Fancast and Cinematic Adventures. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul, with me via the Zoom studio, because as we always say, that is how podcasts are done. That's how interviews are done. I have the fabulous Miss Angela Duncan. Angela, how are you today?
I'm doing amazing.
Oh, that's great to hear. I'm so glad we got to connect. I'm really excited to chat with you. And I think our listeners are going to get a lot of value out of who you are and what you do. So not that I'm trying to tee you up too hard, but why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself to start off?
Yeah, absolutely. I like to start my story way back. I am a survivor of childhood abuse and poverty. And as soon as I was old enough to sign my own lease, I got out of that situation. And I've always been fascinated by numbers and by this tool that we call money. And so I thought if I went to school and studied money, that I would never have to live in that type of environment again. So that kind of started my journey. I took 5 years to finish school, was paying my own way while working 3 jobs, finally finished school. I was a financial advisor during the tech boom. Didn't like that. And so then I thought real estate would be amazing choice to for a career. And then the housing market crashed, stayed in that for a long time, owned a top Remax office, left that, went to insurance, sold that company. And like you said, I host Empower Money podcast, which I launched 8 months ago.
Wow. So 8 months of podcasting. It's funny because I have to sometimes take myself back and be like, I started podcasting probably about 7 years ago. We did our first episode, and the landscape itself has changed so dramatically. So for you, though, podcasting 8 months, how did that experience start off for you?
Yeah. So originally, when I sold my last company, I thought I was going to retire, and I got a little bored, as entrepreneurs do. And I have all of these years of money that I want to teach people. And so originally the idea came of Empower Her Money just for me to do solo episodes. But what I found is everybody's got a money story and everybody can teach something. So why not use this amazing platform that's free to most people and share stories? And so that's kind of how it took off.
And I got to say, you have the coolest microphone that I've ever seen. For those of you guys who are listening to just the audio, it's like this really nice pink microphone. I've never seen one like that. And it matches the chair. That's right. Wow. Look at that. See, your setup's already better than mine. I'm a little jealous. But so when you first started podcasting, though, obviously it's funny because before we started recording, you and I kind of chatted about podcasting and how one of the questions you asked me, which ironically, I don't usually get a lot of questions in the pre-show. So that was a nice refresher for me. But you asked like what helped grow that show. And I kind of explained that this show started off one way and then it shifted to another. Did your show start off? You mentioned that it started off as more of a solo type thing and it's grown and evolved. How did that happen?
Yeah. So I don't like the camera on me necessarily, but I'm extremely curious and I ask a ton of questions. And so I was talking to one of my mentors and, you know, they recommended I do a couple of solo to launch, but if I'm just not comfortable talking by myself, why not put other people on the spotlight, ask them questions and just have them share stories. So I have so much fun with it. Probably like you, I learned so much and I get to meet incredible people all across this world. And, you know, just podcasting is just a lot of fun.
And it's so different now because it's so easy. Like we connected, you know, by email from a Facebook group. Like it's so much easier to connect with people. And really, I love hearing stories and I love hearing people tell their story. There's something just so passionate about people who are just talking about what they love to do. And you really sound like, I don't want to say it in like a weird way, but it sounds like you really love money.
I do love learning money and I love teaching money because it's such a taboo topic, especially in other parts of the world, that if you just learn how to use the tool correctly, you can pretty much accomplish what you want in life. And so trying to take away that scariness from people and giving them some simple, basic information that they can implement, and then we grow from there.
See, I like that you say that it's a taboo subject because it really is. Like in school, they don't teach about money until you're old enough to sign for a credit card. It is wild to think I can't buy a drink, but I can sign for $30,000 of student loans and it's nobody's business.
Right. Absolutely. And it's interesting because as a woman, we've only been able to have our own credit card or our own loans for about 50 years. So just think about like in the 70s, a woman could finally apply for a credit card on her own without having a man to co-sign for her.
That's wild to think. Like, My wife and I, when we first got married, we honestly had trouble talking about money because it was something that we never had to deal with so strongly with a partner. Because when you get married, your finances change dramatically. So for somebody like us, what would be some advice that you would jump off like right away for people that do have trouble talking about money, especially with a significant other?
Yeah, so I like going back to childhood and just kind of asking each other, what did your parents teach you about money? Because that will give you an idea of why you act the way you do today. You know, did your parents teach you how to earn money? Did they, you know, were they self-employed, had their own business, brought you to work? Or perhaps they would tell you things, you know, like the typical money doesn't grow on trees, or we can't afford that, or you don't need that. I think the need part of it really stuck with me as a kid. So understanding where you come from first and sharing those stories and kind of laughing and making it a little bit easier to talk about money, that's the way that I would recommend that you guys start your conversation and then talk about what are your future goals. And so it kind of takes the pressure off of the money part of it.
See, I like that because a lot of people think that money is such a current, like your thoughts on money are very current, like the economy, inflation, like those things are definitely there and you have to take them into consideration. But I've never really thought about, you know, my own childhood with money. So that's interesting to me because now as you were speaking, I was like, what did my parents teach me? And I'm very lucky. Both my parents actually were in banking. So
Ah.
I had a debit card when I was 10 and my parents were like, this is how you do it. I knew how to do a checkbook. People don't know how to do checkbooks anymore.
Oh yeah, my daughter's in college and they're kids without jobs who wouldn't even know how to balance a checkbook. They don't even know what like an interest rate is. So that's amazing that your parents did that very early on.
Oh, I learned about interest rates when we bought our house. It's funny you mentioned the housing market crash. I'm sitting here really hoping that it does again because no. We got very lucky because we bought right before the pandemic. My wife and I, like, we had it's you mentioned goals. One of our goals was before we got married. We wanted to live together and have a home together. And we got incredibly lucky. I have a very nice 3% mortgage. And it's funny because 6 months later, they were up to 7%. And it's wild.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see the residential market crashing anytime soon. I am a heavy real estate investor. Multifamily, however, your apartment complexes, storage, things like that, the next 18 months is going to be really interesting. I think we're going to have a huge buyer's market in that type of industry. I'm not sure that it'll trickle down to residential, but I guess we'll see.
I can dream. So, but it's funny though, because I didn't know anything about this when I'm almost 40. Like I am in the tail end of my 30s, and there are certain things you think you're going to have figured out at a certain age, but money's one of those things that I learned the basics and I had a very basic education. But do you think that the education system in America is flawed when it comes to talking about money and finances?
Oh, it's absolutely failing. And, you know, even think about, so when you were sitting in class, right, we don't promote entrepreneurship. When you're sitting in a class, you're facing forward, you're taught to be quiet, to listen, to stay in uniform, and you listen to the leader that's in front of you. So if you know, equate that to the corporate world, you're used to having a boss. You're not used to thinking outside of the box, being creative. Very few schools allow for you to have that creativity because they're very structured, and that's the way that they pay their teachers, it's the way that they get funding. So until that kind of starts from that top down, I don't know that we're going to see much change. So it really falls on us as parents to teach our kids very early, like you said, the debit card, putting your kids on a credit card, teaching them how to use it properly, growing their credit, you know, putting money away for their Roth account after your retirement account. But, you know, just talking and having like basic language information to them is huge, and it will really help them further along.
And that's the other thing. You mentioned having basic language. My dad worked for US Bank. He worked for US Bank for years to the point. And my dad is the hardest working guy I've ever met. Like his work ethic is insane. We're on vacation. He's taking work calls and then he's coming to join us on the beach. Like he is always working and he loves it. He loves it. He's very passionate about it to the point where they're like, you have to retire. You're well past the threshold. And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm good. But he's explained to me what he does at US Bank or didn't because now he is retired. He's explained it to me seven times and I'm like, you have to use smaller words for me. I'm a simple man with simple taste. Please explain it to me in smaller words. Do you find that financial jargon especially can sometimes be a little intimidating?
Yeah, especially when you're in the industry, because I did start off with Bank of America as my first job. So we had a
Really?
lot of jargon and a lot of initials that made sense to us, DDA, CDA, you know, all of these things that most people wouldn't even know. So
Right.
yeah, you really have to simplify it. But I think same, like if I'm learning about AI, someone really has to simplify that. Otherwise it's going way over my head, you know? So just understanding your audience that you're teaching to, but I love teaching just simple and basic because I think more people need that type of education. So that reach is further. And then once you teach that, sure, you can go from there. But imagine if you just impact one person and you teach them some simple techniques that they do with their family, you're changing their life for generations.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I use this show as an example. So it's funny, I was just talking to the producer, aka the wife, and we were talking about the growth of the show and how the show has changed, especially recently with something like AI. AI is wild in what it can do. But I made it from like, here's the show now. I could hire someone and spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to make this all look pretty and do graphics and do all these things. Or I can spend a couple of hours a week and just learn. And learn how to do this. And if you go on our YouTube channel, you actually see the videos progressively change and improve over time. And part of me was like, why don't I just get rid of the old videos? And I said, no, that's a great reminder of how far I've come. Yeah. So I love the idea of there's a responsibility not only on the parents and, you know, family members to teach, but also for people to learn on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got YouTube, it's free. You've got podcasting, it's free. So there's no longer any excuses about money, not learning about money, because there's so much information that's available. And yes, it can be overwhelming, but find someone that speaks to you. Find someone who you understand that you can relate to and just watch them. And even if you just spend 5 minutes a day learning, it's just incredible what you're going to retain.
So it's funny, you've now mentioned twice having someone, first you mentioned a mentor, and then now you just mentioned having somebody to learn for. It seems like having a mentor and having somebody in your life is important to you. Do you have like an actual mentor that you work with?
Oh yeah, I always have. So, I mean, even in school, if you think about, if you played sports, you had a coach, you know, you've got a teacher when you're in school, but somehow when you leave school, you stop thinking about that mentor. Right. So always have a mentor. And I have two right now. I have one that helps me with my branding and my marketing because that I'm totally clueless. So I need to learn more. And then I do have someone on the podcast side because I would love to grow and teach more people. And so I've always had business coaches. Everything that I've ever run in my companies, I always have someone else kind of bounce ideas off of because they're going to look at your business from a whole different vantage point that you're not seeing. And just to be able to bounce ideas off of someone, to celebrate your wins, to help pick you up when you're feeling down, you know, you're married, so it's great. You've got a spouse to do that. But as a solopreneur, you know, I need someone else to just be able to talk my business to. Right. And oftentimes I can't lean on my friends to do that. I need to have someone that's an expert in that field teaching me correctly so that I can hopefully move forward quickly.
Absolutely. Like even podcasting, I remember our first episode, the first episode we ever did, so excited to do it. And just the first show we ever did, it's still going on. It's called the Multiverse Fancast. It's about, you know, superheroes and comic books and that sort of stuff that we're passionate about, which does translate exceptionally well. The first episode, however, is atrociously bad just on the production side. We started this show and we're like, we can do this. This is easy. And this is back when podcasting was purely audio. It was literally You record it, you put it somewhere, you're good, done. No YouTube, no making clips, no reels, no this. So we get this cheap Blue Yeti microphone. It's a Snowball microphone. And we sit in a room that's humongous. It literally sounds like we're yelling to each other from across a busy freeway. Like that is how bad it is, but we took the time to learn. And the amount of people that I've met on Facebook groups and stuff like that just even little tidbits here and there, it's incredible. So for you though, what was your biggest challenge when you started podcasting?
I think understanding how the different platforms work is huge. I'm still learning hashtags. I think you have to be very specific. And even if you watch someone else and you see that they have a lot of views or maybe they have a lot of followers, you don't quite know everything that went behind the scenes in that production or where they're posting it or how they're posting it. So while you can go out and learn information, you've got to figure out for yourself and test it and see what's going to work because it's really different sometimes based on your topic. I mean, even down to like the colors and the music, people are very strategic on what they're doing and what they're posting for a reason. So I do pay attention a lot to other people and what they're posting and how they're posting it, not necessarily what they're saying. But, you know, storylines, you know, hooks, you understand most of that stuff too. It's just, I want to be able to deliver the message, but it has to be heard first. So in order for it to be heard, I need more people listening. So how do I reach them is just a constant student and something I'm always studying as well.
And it's also a very oversaturated market, especially when the pandemic rolled around, everyone and their grandma had a podcast. It's not it's something that people just didn't understand 5 years ago. And now some, like, I had to explain to people what I did. Like, they're like, what's a podcast? I was like, it's like an internet radio show. They're like, you mean you listen to it on the radio? I'm like, no, you can't listen to it. But so I completely agree. And that's something that I've had to learn, especially transitioning over to video. So here's a perfect example. We used to do our reels purely with audio. So the reels would just be audiograms and it would just be us talking. Sometimes they'd do really well. Other times they'd do terrible. And then we switched to video. So I put it in a template and those would do well. And then sometimes they wouldn't. And then we did one where it was literally with words and with video and suddenly it exploded, like that little tiny tweak. And then it's like you said, it's changing the fonts, it's changing what's going on in the background. And even with videos, like usually when we do a YouTube video, it's purely just the video. Now I'm like, well, I have to do an intro. I have to do some graphics. I have to make it look cool and make it look pretty, because we also live in the generation where it's like, ooh, shiny. And attention is all over the place.
Yeah. And that's so interesting on your story too, because now when I tell people I'm a podcast host, you know, I'm super excited. I'm usually animated. It's just who I am. And people look at me like, you're an influencer? I said, no, it's not the same. I'm not trying to influence anybody. I have a platform and I want to teach you about money. And they're like, why? And so the difference is so funny.
I love it. But like at the same time, it also starts the conversation, right? And I'm able to say, do I influence anyone? Maybe. Like, we've had some incredible guests on the show and everybody brings something so different. And that's why, like, that was a big question I got. We did have a publicist at one point, like when the show was really taking off. That's a whole story that will eventually be told. But so he asked, like, what's your niche? Like, what is it that you guys specifically bring? And I said, I don't want to subscribe to just one thing for this show. I want it to be anybody can come on and just talk about. We've had people talk about money. We've had people talk about relationships. We had a spirit medium on the show, like who saw ghosts. I had a psychic on a week ago. Like, that's the best thing about our show. It caters to everyone. Everybody can find some value, but also having a niche audience, like just like here, I'm here to talk about money. I'm here to help you. I also think that that brings in just such a unique audience too.
Yeah. And I'm sure we could have similar guests on each other's show, but we just talk about different topics. So I had someone who was a psychic, but she owns her own company. So I asked her, like, how did you start your company? What kind of expenses kind of surprised you? She's in New Orleans. And so there was like a flood one time she wasn't expecting. So that's a money thing. And then she says, I talk to people about their businesses when they're thinking about, should I make decision A or decision B? And then she brings in her supernatural talents, as she says, and helps them make that decision. But it's still a business. It's still a business decision. And she still talks about money. So, you know, the same guests can be on different platforms, but have different topics. So it's interesting because then we can all share in the guests. But I think, you know, just having your, for me, having the niche, because I love talking about money, it just speaks to my passion.
And I think that the people that make their passion into their business are some of the happiest people that you could ever find. I'm very lucky that I have a very stable, podcasting is not my job. It is my thing that keeps me sane half the time. And I love doing it. It's my passion. And if it ever turns into a really strong monetary option, that's great. It is on track to do so. We just got monetized on YouTube, which was wild. But for me, like, I'm very lucky that I have a very stable job and stable career that allows me to do this. Is it the best job? No. There are days where I come home and I'm just like, I'm miserable. I just like, we want to just quit and just run away to like Italy or something crazy like that. But I think that people that manage to really find the passion in what they do, wherever, whatever they do, if it's their dream job, cool. If not, still cool. I think that the people that find their passion translate it very well into what they do.
Yes, but you have to make sure you're making money from it too. So passions can be very expensive, but they can be profitable. It really, you still have to have that business mindset, tracking your profit, looking at your P&L statements, making sure that you're monetizing things that you can. I also do speaking, which helps to, you know, fund my lifestyle while the podcast is still launching. But it's just, you know, finding different avenues to promote it. I'm always out and about. I live in Miami and thankfully we can have like 6 networking events every day. And I just get out and meet more people, 4 million people in Miami, and they come from all different walks of life. So everyone likes to talk about money, but then they don't like to talk about money. So it's having fun.
I think it's sometimes easier to listen to somebody talk about money because it's not my money. I don't have to worry about it. But for you though, like what has been your most successful way of promoting your own show?
Yeah, just getting out. For me, it's getting out. And, you know, I'm finding that I'm being a little bit more picky with guests because I can have 100 realtors apply for the show, but that doesn't mean it's helping my audience. And so I'm still keeping my audience in mind with the guests that I choose and approve to be on the podcast. And then, you know, since it can be, I switched this year to sponsorship, so it's no longer free to come on my podcast. But if they come on the podcast, I still do expect for them to share. And I am very adamant about that. We do a pre-interview, making sure that they understand, you know, video quality's got to be there. Audio quality's got to be there. It's on Roku and Amazon, so I need the quality piece of it. And when we post it, you've got to share it. Otherwise, you know, you're wasting both of our time if you're not sharing to your audience too.
Yeah. So I ran into a similar issue because for me, I was really doing it just for the funsies. Like I was just having a blast. And like I said, our podcast, this show specifically took off fast and it took off hard and it still gets great traction. We get great numbers. This show is the reason that our YouTube channel did get monetized. So I'm very grateful for all that. But there was one interview that I did and I had to do it because the publicist that I was working with was like, hey, I'm going to get you on shows, but I'm also going to bring people to be on your show. And it's just, that's how this works. You'll get numbers, you'll get this, you know, sponsorships, the whole nine, but there are certain people that need to be on the show. Like, okay, I totally understand that. Like that's part of our business arrangement. You know, we had a written agreement and all that stuff. I made sure because my dad didn't raise no fool. Like this, the second this started happening, I called my dad. I was like, what do I need to do? He's like, you need to file for an LLC. You need to put something in writing with you and your teammates. And if you're going to hire this publicist, you got to put something in writing as well. All right, cool. That's a good start.
I would challenge you to make sure you have insurance for your LLC, because you could interview someone, put a clip out there, and maybe they don't like it. Maybe it gets them in trouble somehow. They can come back and sue you. So a liability policy, very important for all podcast people.
See, I like that. And people have also suggested, you know, doing waivers and doing, which is always a possibility and something that I always think about, but 99.9% of the time when I have somebody come on the show, they want clips out there. They want all these things. And I've been very fortunate, but yes, I do agree. A little extra protection probably wouldn't be a bad thing, but like I only had one interview where they didn't want to do the video. I was like, okay, like I won't record the video. They're like, no, we don't want to do video at all. I was like, all right. So that's like a phone call. And I'm already like, it's hard to gauge somebody when you can't see them, can't interact with them. You know, the video is one thing. Like I can make that work because the podcast is still an audio podcast, but that's how that started. And then there was a language challenge and he was in, I want to say he was in like Sweden or Norway. So there was a time difference and it was a rough one. We made it work, but I remember that was like maybe the 10th interview that I did at the time. And I was like, is this going to work? Like if we do this, but I'm very lucky that, again, the people that come on the show are the ones that they want. Like, hey, use my videos. Here's my promotional stuff. Like you sent me a very nice media kit. And most people are doing that now with Canva. It's so easy.
Thank goodness for Canva. I'm not creative at all. And you can type in, you know, speaker kit, podcast kit, and boom, it's there. You just got to pop in your stuff.
So it's funny because I wanted to do a nice Canva post from all of our shows for the holidays. So I make one and I'm like, I did a good job. Like, this looks great. The producer looks at it and somehow she managed to make it better. And like, she just by looking at it, she is amazing at it. I said, that's a marketable skill. Like nowadays people want, like even making a YouTube thumbnail is like an art form now. It's wild. That's something I had to learn doing all this.
Yeah. Cause like you said, the audience is huge, but so are the amounts of content creators. So you have to grab that person right away. And colors are so important.
So obviously I'm going to assume your colors involve pink.
Oh, of course. I'm glad Barbie brought it back. I've loved pink for a long time, so I'm glad it's popular right now.
So it's funny because like for our show, we have three shows and they're all on our YouTube channel because I did not want to make three separate YouTube channels because I would have lost my mind. Yeah. And so, and also that way there's content throughout the week for anybody. So I was like, all right, I got to figure out colors to make all of these shows different, but at the same time, part of the network. So we actually have now grown to 5 YouTube channels and they each have a unique style, but they also still have our branding, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for anybody who's listening and they're looking to start channels or do this, always learn your branding first, because you want it to hook, but you also want people to know it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
So for you though, what was like your holy shit moment? Like, I never even thought of that when it came to doing podcasting.
Yeah, I think for me, it was writing a book, honestly, because I teach about simple math, you know, investing language. And sometimes people get lost in it. And what I kept hearing from people is like, I try to read a book about money and I get lost because the words don't make sense to me. The vocabulary is not there. I feel like I need a dictionary just to read this book. Where do I start? Like, so that for me was an aha moment. I wanted to just put simple information that you can apply immediately. And so when I did that, I found people saying, oh, I found you because of your book, because obviously there's a page in the book about the podcast too. So I was amazed at how many people were either listening to my show from the book or had bought the book, and that's how they found me. So that built a lot of credibility for me. And it was really just taking the same things that I'm saying right here on the podcast and putting it in a paper format to reach different people. I was amazed. And that was kind of an aha moment for building credibility for me. Now, when I go to speaking events, I can say best-selling author, and they're like, wow, I mean, that's more amazing to them than being a podcast host. But you put a lot more time and energy in the podcast than I did the book, you know, so it's incredible.
So, well, with that being said, what is the name of your book?
It's called Empower Your Money. I did have a book coach to teach me. My brand is Empower Her Money, but what I learned is the top five most searchable words, especially on Amazon, is you, your money, guarantee, and sex. And so when I was picking out topics, I didn't want to put sex on my book. So it is Empower Your Money, which is two of those five words.
I'm trying to figure out how that would work into the title anyway, but my little brain is hurting. It's funny because like things like that, like Google Trends and, you know, finding the right hashtag. If you go on like I hate TikTok. I am the worst at TikTok. It is literally my least favorite of all social medias, but obviously for the podcast, I post to it. And you watch people, they'll put hashtags on there that have nothing to do with what you're watching. And I'm like, I don't get it. And then once I started learning about algorithms and trends and stuff like that, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But I always felt it was kind of trolling and mm-hmm. kind of like redirecting. But I love the fact that you wrote a book. It's on my bucket list to write a book. I just don't know what I would write it about. So that's where I'm at.
Start putting your thoughts down and it'll come to you. There's so many apps where you can just talk into it and it just takes notes for you.
So it's funny because like for editing, we can actually talk into our editor and it'll actually type it out and like make work. It's wild what you can do with technology nowadays. I'm still a pen and paper kind of guy. I have my little notebook that's on the table over there that my wife got me, and I love just jotting down notes.
Yeah. I used to do that, but I now use the Remarkable. And so it's just a note taker. It's like writing on paper. But you can put things in different folders. So when I have interviews or if I'm interviewing someone else, and I just jot down the notes, then that's how I do it. So no more paper.
I like that. It still helps you keep organized. And it's always about finding what works for you. I have worked with thousands of different editors and apps and AI tools. Like even today, my wife was like, I didn't know there were so many AI tools until you started showing me some of them. And I was like, it's crazy nowadays.
Yeah.
Going back to financial stuff, though, do you find that the improvements in technology, especially things like AI, are impacting how people learn about money or use money?
I think it's doing the opposite. It's becoming more and more overwhelming. And, you know, even when I talk about just basic money tracking apps, there's so many out there. And when you go on the app store, I think people get lost and they just turn it off because they don't know where to start. And so I think even with the advancement of technology, it's kind of working backwards and people just want to learn some simple things, but you're overwhelmed by the amount of information that is out there.
And what about with like some of the more modern trends, like cryptocurrency got huge for a while. You had your Bitcoins, your Dogecoins and all that stuff. And what are those stupid art, the NFTs and people that were putting millions of dollars into things that weren't really real in a physical way. What do you think about stuff like that though?
Yeah. Cause you can NFT now and tokenize a piece of property. And for me, I'm old school. I like simple and basic. And when I keep it simple, it makes sense to me. And I think that's to, you know, a lot of people who are not studying money, that's going to keep them on board too. So I don't invest in crypto. I'm not an NFT. You can even buy like a fraction now of, you know, a Picasso if you wanted to. I like tangible items. I'm a huge real estate investor. It makes sense to me. I can go look at it if I need to. and it may disappear in a day with, you know, a fire or something like that, but I've got insurance on it. So unlike some of those other things that can really go to zero and you really have no control over it.
See, I like that because one of my questions to you was going to be like, when you go to invest, what do you look at first? And the idea of tangible property, and obviously real estate is your big one. Do you have a second one that you also like to invest in?
I'm still in the stock market, but you know, I like bigger companies. So mid to large companies. I'm not huge on international, again, because I just don't understand the companies and the cultures enough to invest in it. So I invest in what I know and what I can understand and actually do research that makes sense to me. So yeah, stock market, I'm still a little bit in. I would say invest in shoes. I buy a lot of shoes, but those aren't really an investment. They go down in value. So I don't recommend that.
So I think my biggest investment, I have a comic book hanging up on the wall back there that it's the first appearance of Wolverine. All right. Big, big money. A good copy goes for about $6,000 right now. My copy would probably go for about $1,000 quality.
And you can't really see much of it in the background here, but I'm also a huge coin and currency collector. Go figure, the money person likes to collect money. But yeah, that's something that can go up in value too, but it's tangible. I can pull it out. I can look at it.
See, I like that too. Now, what about depictions of money in the movies? Because a lot of people base their information on things like people think that The Wolf of Wall Street is an accurate depiction about how Wall Street worked back in like that time period. What do you think about movies and how they depict finances and money?
Yeah, I think it's like similar to your comic book heroes, right? They don't really exist. And I can't go shake Superman's hand, right? Although there could be really strong people that can do incredible things. To me, movies are meant to be fiction, 100%. Even when I watch some of the documentaries and things like that, you got to understand that someone wrote it, someone put some information in there, and you have no idea if it's really factual, you know? So I don't watch any TV for the most part, unless it's motivational stuff like Tony Robbins, things like that on YouTube. I control a lot of the information that comes in and out of my brain, hopefully. But yeah, that's also one of my challenges to most people is to cancel your subscriptions, you know, get some money back on things you don't use. But yeah, I'm sorry, we went way off topic there.
I don't care. There's no script to this show. That's half the fun. I like going off topic because again, it's people, you get passionate, you get excited, you start talking and you just go. But it's funny you mentioned Tony Robbins. Have you ever seen him live?
Oh, absolutely. I did the firewalk. Have you been there?
I did the firewalk. Yes.
So the whole day they're showing fire on the screen. And I thought, no way, I am not walking through that fire. And then you get there and you see it. You're like, oh, I could do this. So that was an incredible experience.
That was a long weekend. I went with a coworker, our boss at the time, he's a motivational speaker now, in his retirement, and he paid for us to go. And I was young. I was probably like 22-ish. So I was like, I don't need a motivational speaker, but doing that fire walk was probably one of the most empowering things that I've ever done in my entire life.
Oh yeah. I highly recommend going in person to at least one of his events. I mean, to spend 12 hours and then come back the next day, you've got to have an incredible speaker.
Oh yeah. And he's obviously, for a lot of people, he's the speaker. Like everybody kind of knows him. Do you have any other speakers that you really resonate with?
In person wise, I tend to watch more females now. So like Candy Valentino, she wrote this book called Wealth Habits. She's coming out with a second book in March. Tonight, I'm going to go see Jen Gottlieb. She's big on AI. And so I like just hearing the different female perspective, because for me, I truly think that women, we invest differently. We think differently. We approach business differently. And so it speaks to me. And then the more information I can learn, obviously, the more I can give to my audience as well. So it's really around different industries that are more current and relevant and around business and money in person.
So you mentioned that, you know, women invest differently than men. What do you think the biggest difference in men and women when it comes to finances is?
I do believe that as men, you're logical. You think about things, even when you talk about, you know, if you have a conversation with your wife, for example, and you're trying to make a decision, you usually will say, I think. And so it's very logical, very brain, right? With women, we're more heart-centered and we feel. So like, if I'm going to invest in something, I want to visually see it. I want to be able to feel like, what is this investment going to mean for me? And so it's more of a I feel situation instead of an I think situation. And we tend to be more conservative, be more lenient, especially on tenants when we're having a single family property. And we are scared to ask questions. And so I think a guy is very logical and they're like, wait, what? Whereas a woman is going to be shy and not think about it because she's feeling it here and it's heavy. And so that's why I think is a huge difference between men and women.
So I like that, because when in that job that I mentioned where my boss sent us to Tony Robbins, it was a sales job for the most part. I taught at a martial arts school and I did enrollments there. And part of the biggest, I don't want to say sales tactics or a technique for sales, is getting that person emotionally involved and mm-hmm. making them think a little bit differently. Like, you know, it's easy to say, here's our program, here's how much it costs. But it's totally different to have the kid come in and experience it and feel it and see the parent then watch the kid be happy. Like, it changes everything. That's why I hate buying cars, because they will come at you with all this information, and car salesmen are the best at making it seem like you're getting the best deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't believe that the car buying process, I mean, it's changed a little bit with like some of the new technology that delivers your car. But for the most part, it hasn't. And you sit there for hours. I'm like, do you know how much I charge per hour? Take that off the car?
So it's funny, the last car buying experience I had was horrific. I was a Ford guy for a long time. And this is not a slight against Ford. It had nothing to do with the actual car. It was the sales process. And it goes to show, I worked with this one guy for a long time. He always took very good care of our family. Like, if you needed something, he was great, discounts, like getting things done and being very fair. He got promoted, rightfully so. He was a great salesman, and he did a good job, and you should get rewarded for doing well at your job. Most people just do well at their job, then get more responsibilities, less pay. Weird, but America. So he gets promoted. I get this new guy who I have no rapport with, no connection with. And it got so bad that I ended up leaving Ford, and I went to another car dealership, and the guy that I met within a half hour, I was like, I want to do business with this guy, because he connected with me the right way.
And hopefully it wasn't a brand new car.
It was a lease. I leased this one.
Okay, good. All right. We're going to have a conversation if it was.
Oh God. Brand new cars are, that's a whole other discussion. But unfortunately, we are getting towards the end of our time. Now, at the end of all of our episodes, we do like to play a little game. It's a rapid fire question game, if you're interested in playing, of course.
Let's do it.
All right. So what is a book or resource that has significantly influenced your financial mindset?
The Traveler's Gift was probably one of my early books, non-money related, because it talked about happiness and how we can control our attitude, and it's about the only thing in life we can control.
Ah, yes, I love that. All right, what is one piece of advice for women looking to take control of their finances?
Take the time to invest in your own education first before you make your investments. It'll help you feel a whole lot better.
What is a budgeting tip that you find particularly effective?
If you don't want it in your life, such as Starbucks, delete the app.
Oh, see, I like that, because the apps are what gets you. All right, last one, and this is more just because I'm curious. What is a future goal or vision for your Empower Her Money show?
I would love to be able to reach more people internationally, to learn about culture and money internationally, so I can incorporate that in what I teach.
Awesome. Love that. Because I am a podcaster. It is a big part of what I do. It is a big part of my personality. And one of the best things is always talking to other podcasters just to see where they want to go. Because even though we're doing the same thing, the end goal can be exceptionally different. And I love it. Mm-hmm. Now, if anybody wanted to listen to your show, talk to you about your services, find out a little bit more about you, how would they be able to do that?
Yeah. So on Instagram, TikTok, podcast, Empower Her Money, or Angela Duncan on LinkedIn or Facebook.
See, I love that. It's straight. It's your brand. And I'm sure if you guys go onto her stuff, there's going to be something pink there. So just that's how you know you're in the right spot.
Yes.
But Angela, this was fantastic. I learned a lot. I really hope that some of our listeners are walking away going, man, I never even thought about that.
Yes. But awesome. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. And hopefully we'll hear from you soon. Take care. All right. That is the end of the recording.
I have one more question for you.
Yes, please.